About 10 years ago, near the end of each year, we used to go down to Fort Myers to a certain spot, and it wasn't that fancy or anything, but it was warm, and there were a lot of nice restaurants within walking distance. And we spent a few days, maybe even a week, I'm not sure anymore, walking and talking. And the idea was, we were in transition in the business and trying to move from this to that. And we emerged from that weekend having written down what we talked about and the decision that we had made, which hallway we're going to go down the next year. And then Rita and I joke because as in the next year then, as we head down that hallway and a window opens up, I want to jump out the window or a door and I want to go through the door. It's Rita's duty to slam that door shut because she can. And that keeps us on track. And it worked very, very well. So it's kind of joke-worthy, it's also very, very good. And it made a difference in our lives. So in that spirit of kind of keeping the door shut so I don't veer, I'm going to kind of read some things, but I hope that doesn't get in the way at all. What if you're leadershiped out? It's an interesting title. Today we spend tens of billions of dollars on leadership and personal development. Everyone sees the need for healthier relationships in our churches and in our homes, or in our businesses. And we typically don't do this development well on our own. And so a whole leadership industry has sprung up to meet the need. They have done a fantastic job, ranging from life coaches to efficiency experts to executive development specialists to sales trainers to consultants of all types. The leadership industry in general has been a very positive force. Our churches and businesses have worked hard at leadership training and development and are now able to clearly express their focus. And this clarity helps them see and achieve great things that would have been much less attainable to us a generation ago. But while clarity is a good thing and is necessary, it is not sufficient. Businesses and churches still have to get their work done, and that's the main thing. And they have to do it in a fast-changing world while developing leaders and themselves. And work has changed. In the past, the richer you were, the more leisure time you had. Now the stats show that this is reversing since 1980. Leaders in an entity now often don't have as much leisure time as the rank and file, and they often derive their personal identity from their work more than ever. There's a new term for this. It's called workism. You've probably heard it. The combined inputs that leaders have for both leadership training and getting the work done are like drinking from a fire hose, creating overload and fatigue. As a friend of mine recently said, I'm about leadershiped out. And I think my friend was pointing to the fact that leadership development efforts can make it hard to get the work done. Sometimes you just feel like getting the work done, period. He knows leadership development is vital, but getting the work done just seems more basic. And sadly, I think he had in mind all the buzzwords that the different coaches seem to have. Present company excluded. Sometimes coaches and leadership types have more smart-sounding vocabulary than actual wisdom. They don't always walk the walk or prepare adequately if they are coaching unsophisticated clients. A few seem to have a business model of trying to dazzle the peasants. So I liked my friend's terminology and thought, Today I would let you feel the complexity of getting the work done and the complexity of leadership training itself. And I thought a lot about the goal of true success in life. And then on top of that, at this conference, as Ken Hostetler mentioned, you're probably trying to execute some sort of a 5-year plan broken down incrementally into different time frames. So it's all very intense and complex. And with all that complexity comes the need to learn, learn, learn. And too often we approach this learning like a curriculum. We push to get knowledge into our brains. But this can overwhelm us and get us leadershiped out. The curricular approach is inadequate to get us to true success in life. There has to be a better way, and that's what I hope to explore in this talk. Work often consists of complex systems that must be coordinated in order to get things done. These complex systems have many parts. Each part has to do its own part to benefit the whole entity and get that power. Each part has to expand the whole pie, and this demands a lot. To get work done efficiently, you have to figure out the macro strategies and the more micro tactics. You think about critical path. Where are the critical pressure points that have to happen when? Strategy and tactics, not the other way around. And strategy and tactics will be needed at each level or location of your entity or entities. And this is more than one person can do, which means you will need help. And so you hire employees. They must then have the leadership training and skills needed to develop the strategy and tactics of getting the work done at each level or location of your entity or entities. And now you have more employees doing more things. There is more to manage. There are multiple projects and initiatives. And all these employees need development and training. The enterprise is complex and interconnected. There are personnel issues. You have to change and develop yourself. You have to finance growth. You didn't expect this. You do as well as you can to handle the onslaught and drink from the fire hose, but you have limits. You are constrained by inadequate time or capital or suboptimal tools or inadequate training. And then recalcitrant vendors pressure your deadlines and demanding customers assert themselves. It's a battle between the macro and the micro functions and between training and development and getting the work done. But you have to execute on strategies and tactics. Your future and your reputation rely on that. And you say, if it were easy, everyone would do it, or some such saying that reframes your situation so to make it positive or at least a little less unbearable. I mean, you do read constantly and have learned that leaders need to contend with these limitations, right? So I made a quick list of some of the typical areas of any enterprise or division that you as leader might typically need to address. And you better take notes because this is important. I will identify 8 areas. You will need strategies and tactics in each of these areas. For interactive behavioral understanding and development, there's DISC, Myers-Briggs, StrengthFinders, Enneagram, Style of Influence, Insights, Discovery, Values in Action, Social Styles, 16 Personalities, the 5 Love Languages, Colby, Team Ability, Predictive Index, Work Traits, FireB, LIFO, HBDI, and my personal favorite, How to Fascinate. Got those? That's one area. And then for personal leadership and mastery, there are personal areas of counseling, like Regier's, Caring for the Heart, Tim LaHaye's, Spirit-Controlled Temperament, Spiritual Pathway Assessments, and others too numerous to mention. There's systems theory, how to understand, analyze, and approach the organization. You see an organism made of numerous parts that must work in harmony if the larger system is to be effective. I don't know the tools that are at your disposal, but I'm sure it would take lots of time to name them if I did. There is the psychology of decision-making, both personal and corporate. I don't know the tools at your disposal for that. There's winning friends and influencing people, people in management, labor, the vendors, the customers, ministry, congregants, etc. I don't know the tools that are at your disposal. There's sales and marketing. I don't know the tools that are at your disposal. There's operations. There's flow, purchasing, facilities, maintenance, etc. I don't know the tools that are at your disposal. There's accounting, legal, regulatory, benefits. Now here, I know the tools at your disposal, but we have bigger fish to fry. Let's keep going. There's a lot more, and you as business and church leaders know so much more about this than I ever will. The simple recurring message hammered into your brain right now is that in spite of being stuck in a bed of unrelenting complexity, you had better have strategies and tactics for each of these areas if you don't want to become a statistic or the object of gossip. And that simple message should fill you with chills. Not to be a downer, but I have already described an impossible situation. And we still have to talk about culture and leadership, so it gets worse. We have indicated that strategy matters more than tactics, and strategy and tactics are already consuming you, and now let's add culture. Peter Drucker is a name very familiar to us. He was a management consultant, educator, and author whose writings contributed greatly to the foundations of modern business corporation. He famously said many good things, including, management is doing things right. Leadership is doing the right things. And there is nothing so useless as doing efficiently that which should not be done at all. But also, he famously said, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So culture matters more than strategy or tactics. So we better learn about culture. The great intellectual philosopher and teacher, Joseph Campbell, who did the series The Power of Myth, said that at the root of any culture are shared values, assumptions, and symbols. It's the shared things that tie us together. Values, assumptions, and symbols. Values are the principles that guide us. Assumptions are the beliefs or ideas that we hold to be true. And symbols define our world while expressing our emotions, and these are at the root of any culture. Ken Hosteller captured it well in saying, it's the stuff everyone aspires to. So since culture is more important than strategy and tactics, we had better read some books about culture, and here are a few titles to get you started. Culture Hacker by Green. Co-opetition by Brandenburger. Building a Design-Driven Corporate Culture by Bruner, Emery, and Hall. Building a Magnetic Culture by Sheridan. Israeli Business Culture by Lautman. And so on. Now, as I said, you're already drinking from a fire hose, and I understand that. I really do, but I have to meet my contractual obligations to Boost. So I'm gonna keep going, and we'll press on because we still have to talk about leadership itself. We need it. We need leadership to develop culture, which we will then need for strategy and tactics so we can get the work done. And so you ask, can't we just develop so that we can more easily handle these competing demands? There's a whole leadership and development industry just waiting to help. And indeed, there is a whole leadership industry at your disposal. And as I pointed out earlier, they provide an essential service. And they have defined what leadership is. From Harvard Business Review back in 2012, in describing the state of the leadership industry, leadership involves, among other things, competence and interpersonal skill. That's Wittenberg. Visionary and administrative components, Nanninga. Confidence, that's Trumbull. The ability to empathize, Williams. Being a curious follower and a good listener, Shirley. Increasingly being comfortable with the idea that no one person is in charge of anything anymore, that's Green. The choice of followers, Niney. The ability to learn from repeated failure, Saili. A quest for integrity, that's Pianessi. A combination of ego control and ambition for the institution, Chelo. Communicating where you're going and creating a desire on the part of others to go and to be with you, Flanagan. High emotional stability, Seekers. And authenticity in everything we do, that's Gogolapati. Wow, I'm not sure I can deal with all that. The list is long, but woefully inadequate. And even here, some definitions compete with one another or disagree with other definitions, it doesn't breed confidence that we actually know what we're talking about. Now, I'm the member of a monthly business persons gathering named Developing Excellence. In that group of very successful, or in my case, very ambitious, business owners and leaders, we have a member who is very well read in the area of corporate and personal leadership. He's a tough but inspirational guy, and he is disciplined enough to have read one book a week for several decades now. He knows what he is talking about. He has a great deal of certainty, and he talks. a lot actually, and he is exceedingly sure of himself and has built an amazing set of enterprises and is worth listening to. He buys and sells large companies using his immense intelligence, unstoppable drive, and an apparently massive financial war chest. And if we were all birds, he would certainly be an eagle. However, he only reads one book a week. In 2015, the leadership industry produced 1,400 books. It comes out to about 4 new books a day on the average. If he read only 52 books out of 1,400, that's only about a 4% thoroughness ratio. So if this eagle can't do more than 4%, what hope is there for us buzzards? So now that we have moved up to the topic of leadership itself, is there more that we should be doing? Yes. In my rather extensive preparations for this speech, I'm afraid I have uncovered a glaring gap in leadership training that you will need to add to your already interminable list of to-dos. I will show you a leadership problem that you didn't know you face in your company or your congregation, and then I will provide you with the solution which is available from my new company. And I'll kind of apologize in advance for this section, but I trust you will still buy. So many macro problems in the American workplace can be scientifically traced to problems in personal relationships. We know that everything ultimately rises or falls on personal relationships. We also understand that some personal relationships are more important than others. And at the top of this hierarchy of personal relationships is the most important one, falling in love. And I think we would all agree that falling in love is very important. I mean, there are songs written about falling in love. It has captivated the souls of so many poets, singers, troubadours, down through the ages. Any of us could name a dozen love songs in a heartbeat. They're catchy. We resonate with them because we were all young once, and we want to give and get love. So these love songs are everywhere. There are no songs that have been written about tactics, strategy, and culture. I checked. At least not in the USA. There may be some in North Korea. But focusing on falling in love has, the whole focus on falling in love has been neglected in the leadership industry. So here's how my thinking went. Please follow. I believe you as leaders should know that if Drucker is right and your culture eats strategy for breakfast, and if Campbell is right and our cultural relationships are united on values, assumptions, and symbols, and if, as is popularly well known, falling in love is the most important human relationship, it should be obvious to any thinking person that there should be leadership books on falling in love. So today, I am happy to announce that I am making available for purchase some additional materials for you and your team to integrate into your training environment as you pursue excellence in your organization. It's just some more leadership training, just a few more books, just a little more time. I have invested much time, talent, treasure in becoming a self-recognized expert in leadership training in the area of falling in love, even earning the rather prestigious but humbling designation of LSY Miller DL, Doctor, that's Doctor of Love. Very few carry this designation. I spent an entire weekend getting it, and being a leader doctor with an action bias, I quickly grabbed the leadership opportunity and started my company, Boost Love at More Enterprises, LLC, or BLAME for short. And I have brought to this conference the 3 leadership books I have written on this bedrock important area of falling in love. Intelligent persons will, of course, allow the titles to speak for themselves. How to Fall in Love for Dummies with a handy checklist. Seven Habits of Finding and Keeping a Mate. Efficient Courtship Techniques in the Workplace. With 52 weekly training modules. And the offer for you today, for those who order all three of these online in the next 2 minutes at the Blame website, I also have offer a complimentary, that's free, two-volume desk display set that you will be proud to display in your home or office. The mystery of a man. The mystery of a woman. So, now you see why I apologized in advance. Of course, I am using absurdity to make a point. You don't use a curriculum to fall in love. And you shouldn't use a curriculum to fit a business into a successful life. It will just get you leadershipped out. A curricular or prescriptive approach is like a bulldozer. It tells you what you have to do, and you can't bulldoze yourself into true lifetime success any more than you can in falling in love. And yet, I see business owners trying to do exactly that all the time. Bulldozing themselves into excellence, whatever that is. And they try to leave scratch marks up higher on a tree than anyone else. And I admit, it's tempting. It can be exhilarating to build a business. And too often the leadership industry and their professional advice and coaching just stops right there. They focus on efficiency. Just going fast feels good, and it impresses a lot of onlookers, but it is devious. As a 75-year-old near billionaire told me, it was fun building it. But his glory had departed. His wife was sick most of the time. The fun was past. Only the work of cleanup was left. He had to unpack the mountain of assets that he had efficiently but blindly packed for those many years. Sadly, his purpose did not live as long as he did. Although he was amazing, apparently his advisors wanted to be more professional than personal. They should have cared enough to design a purpose beyond going fast well and making high scratch marks. They should have helped him shift consciousness from financial success to something far more precious, exalted, and transcendent. You will need a purpose, a why. And that purpose had better be far above what I often hear from ambitious young owners, making money so you can give back in some vague, indeterminate way. We've heard the expression give back here at this conference, but you notice the way it was used was not vague and indeterminate. Someone from the Ukraine had come many years ago, and they were simply closing the loop. Very different. But sometimes I hear that idea of giving back in a kind of a different way. Or do well so I can help the most fortunate. No, although that may be good, it's not good enough. You will want a whole new consciousness. And if I tried to talk to you now about your consciousness, I'd be right back to a curricular approach. That'd just get you more leadershipped out. So let's look at a few company websites instead. Usually company websites are kind of about the glory that is me, and these show at least some form of consciousness beyond that, that maybe we'll all remember. These companies have apparently started to expand their awareness of identity and purpose, and there is no need to take notes. Just enjoy. Go ahead with the first one. The first one is Berlin Gardens. Their website says, "Can backyard living really restore the soul? I know this company well. It's local. They specialize in outdoor environments. We do their 401k and are there regularly, and we see their commitment to really developing each and every employee. They show a consciousness of the value of nature and the value of showing, not just teaching, leadership. Next. Next one is the Dove Self-Esteem Project. Our society often brings low self-esteem to young girls. Dove is a soap company that has taken on the mission of strengthening and encouraging young women in their identity and self-esteem. Dove shows a consciousness of the power of strengthening the weak. Next. Eventide. This is an investing company from Boston managed by a conservative Anabaptist. They have socially and biblically responsible, environmentally sensitive, forward-looking mutual funds that do investing that makes the world rejoice. They show a consciousness of a more consistent, non-dualistic life ethic. Investments should reflect values. Number four, JDM Structures. This local Amish company has one of the best purpose statements anywhere: to reflect the hand of God. This shows a consciousness of aspiring toward excellence as part of a stewardship of gifts. It's a very humble positioning. Regular people doing artistic craftsmanship for God's glory. I spoke with the owner, Daniel Miller, and I think some people who were here at this conference have directly impacted their thought processes in arriving at their very succinct and articulate statements of pledge, purpose, vision, mission, and belief. Number five, L'Eterno. I remember reading a book of Men and Mountains when I was a kid. But R.G. L'Eterno was a heavy earth-moving equipment manufacturer who practiced reverse tithing, that is to give 90% and live on 10%. He was instrumental in creating L'Eterno College in Texas. It shows a consciousness of levering a business to train people to impact millions of lives. Number six, Melway. This is an Ohio collection of mining, aggregate, concrete, blacktopping, and trucking companies. When mining a new area, the owners detected that locals were concerned about Melway's big trucks on a secluded country byway. Although the company had no legal obligation, they took initiative at their own expense to retrofit the byway into a high-quality highway to bless their new neighbors with comfort and safety. This shows a consciousness of being a kind and thoughtful neighbor who values and commits to long-term positive relationships. Number seven, Patagonia. Patagonia is structured as a benefit corporation. I want to do a little insert here. A benefit corporation is a form of business organization that takes on a duty to help others, somewhat of a hybrid between a for-profit and a not-for-profit entity. And incidentally, it's not yet available in Ohio, but it's available in most states. It is different from the popular certification of B Corp, in that a benefit corporation offers liability protections. So Patagonia tries to benefit all stakeholders, not just the shareholders. So this would include supply chain, employees, communities, and a broad environment. They want to accept responsibility for their impact everywhere, and it shows a consciousness and a respect for being interconnected. Number eight, 8 Days of Hope. This is a non-denominational evangelical charity that helps those in need. It's on this list because the founder sold a company and decided to use proceeds and energy to attract and organize groups of volunteer helpers. It started when the founder and his dad invited others to help with hurricane cleanup, and 600 helpers showed up. This changed their consciousness. It now has a rapid response organization and an 8-day group working with churches and governments. They can help communities organize to accept the 3,000 helpers that come swarming in. They continue gaining momentum. It shows us how work can be a massive springboard with far more meaning than we typically think. Number nine, Stoll Industries. I became aware of this company through my colleague John Mullett. When I went to their website, their main page was about orphans and not about the typical glory that is me. They support children in India so that they can live and thrive. This shows a consciousness that children are a primary concern. This feels like a company that sees so transcendently far beyond the mundane issues of commerce. Tilmore. This is a derivative of Ventrac with some intrepid goals. We saw a little bit about that yesterday. They make specialized tools for small farmers, and I think they want to revolutionize agriculture in the developing world with these expensive and durable, easy-to-repair, component-oriented pieces of equipment. They show a consciousness of farmers in the developing world mattering as much as us. It wasn't, and that video he had about that Russian delivery of the Ventrac felt so inspiring. The thing I would note about it, please note how embedded that goodness felt. It wasn't bolted on. You can tell when people do that. I really value that. Walnut Creek Foods. This is a food manufacturing, distribution, and retailing business in Walnut Creek, Ohio. The owner writes a regular weekly column of encouragement in a local paper, with two of these annually being Express Gospel messages. This shows a consciousness and a willingness to use his prominent platform to spread good news. Much more that is quietly behind the scenes could be stated, but this is a visible part. Number 12, Gore Companies. Gore has tried to move, this is like Gore-Tex for your shoes. They have tried to move beyond traditional hierarchical organizational structures. Instead, they employ a lattice, which they use coaches or sponsors, and a team structure where associates make personal goals and are expected to keep them. They're neither hierarchical nor completely flat, hence the word lattice. They show a consciousness of dignity, responsibility, and fun. Number 13. Edwin's Leadership and Restaurant Institute. This 501c3 started in a prison. It now operates as a French restaurant in Cleveland with the goal of being the best French restaurant in the U.S. They hire applicants with alternative resumes. The founder had been incarcerated and is now dedicated to training chefs for jobs in French restaurants everywhere, empowering willing minds and preparing students for a successful transition home. They graduate 100 students a year. Their recidivism rate is under 2%. And you can go to their website to see an Oscar-nominated documentary, Knife Skills 2018. It's about a half hour. It'll make you cry, or it'll shock you. And they show a consciousness of humility, hard work, excellence, and acceptance of marginalized people as they are. Finally, number 14, Miller Cabinet in Plain City, Ohio. When the previous owner went bankrupt, four employees bought the company out of bankruptcy. But what should they do with customers who had paid large deposits on cabinets from the old owners? That deposit money was gone in the bankruptcy. It was typically 50% of the price of a cabinet. The new owners decided they would honor the old contracts, even though they had no legal obligation to do so, and would take a massive financial hit right out of the gate. Unexpectedly, but of course, this made the Columbus Papers. And today, they are thriving, thank you very much. This shows a consciousness of doing the right thing regardless. Talk about the speed of trust, right there. Are they trustworthy? Yes. So if you're leadershiped out, think on these lines. You'll still have to work hard, you still have to be a leader, and you're not getting off the hook, and there's no easy button. But contained in the solution somewhere is the idea of thinking new thoughts, rising up on eagle's wings, find out who, what, why you are, reflect the hand of God, allow God to show you the stars, God will use your feet of clay. Thank you.